I would like to start by thanking all the colleagues that have traveled and come to Paris and gave us these two beautiful days. I must say, I've been extremely interested and even excited by the science that I've had the privilege to hear, and many of you as well, I guess. And I hope it will be a follow-up of this meeting in the next years. Because it's sort of a club that now we are forming. I mean, the Matrix people and the Parkinson people and even the homeoprotein transduction people. There are less of them, but still. I'm going to tell you a few things primarily about Parkinson's disease today. Models of Parkinson's disease. And then please stay, because we shall have an address by Vitek Trash, which I think will be sort of, you know, novel. It's going to tell us new ways of publishing in science. And I think it's very interesting to hear his vision of science publishing. So the first thing I would like to tell you is that these transcription factors that we are working on, called the homeoproteins, have been described as developmental transcription factors. But they are not only developmental transcription factors. They are expressed throughout adulthood. And there are two examples that are dear to my heart, OTX2 and NGRELD. And today I will talk primarily about NGRELD, because yesterday Clémence told you everything almost about OTX2, in a very talented way, I must say. But as you can see, as time goes, the pattern of expression of these transcription factors is modified. So that if you take NGRELD, for example, which is first expressed very widely in the midbrain and the hindbrain, part of the hindbrain, as time goes, I mean, in the adult, will be expressed primarily in the cerebellum and here in these nuclei, which are in fact the aminergic nuclei of the ventral midbrain. The same for OTX2, which is normally expressed in the entire forebrain, but is absolutely not expressed in the forebrain in the adult, even though the protein is present, as you could hear yesterday. Now, sort of summarizing what we know about these transcription factors for their signaling capacities. They can transfer between cells, and the transfer is due to the third helix, which is responsible for the internalization of the transcription factors of this family, and also a secretion domain here, which is taking part of the second helix, the hinge between helix 2 and helix 3, and part of helix 3. Indeed, I mean, the protein is much bigger than that and has several interaction domains that are responsible for their properties. And there have been several reviews on that, that if you are really interested, you can have a look at them. As Clément said yesterday, I mean, this is a very universal mode of signal transduction, this transport of transcription factors of this family between cells. And this indicates that it is probably a very ancient mode of signal transduction, since you find it in plants and in animals. And in fact, the transcription factors of this family were invented very early during evolution. In fact, in the first eukaryotic cells, you can find these transcription factors, and we speculate that these transcription factors are probably the most ancient molecules that are responsible for cell-cell signaling. Yesterday, I mean, Clémence showed you that OTX2 in the cortex, traveling primarily from the choroid plexus, can regulate plasticity in the cortex. And she mentioned, she showed very convincingly, that these transcription factors coming from the choroid plexus is present in the cortex and throughout the cortex. She also showed that this critical period of plasticity that opens with the first OTX2 threshold closes with the second OTX2 threshold and can be reopened, plasticity can be reopened, if you remove a TX2 in the adult, allowing you to cure neurodevelopmental diseases. And she gave the example of amblyopia, which is a neurodevelopmental disease. If I am taking these slides again, it's because what happens, in fact, is that when OTX2 arrives in the parvalbumin cells, because of the interaction with the perineuronal nets, in fact, you start to have an increased inhibition, and you start this interaction between the pyramidal cells and the inhibitory cells that can create these oscillations, which we know take place in the cortex. And the fact that the transcription factors does that throughout the cortex may be responsible or may explain that this transcription factor, this is a hypothesis, may be important in the synchronization of the entire cortex and its functioning. And the synchronization of oscillations throughout the cortex is indeed something very important if we think of cognition. Now, I will go to the second part, which is the use of these transcription factors, or the possible use of these transcription factors as putative therapeutic proteins. And the work that I'm going to describe, I mean, has been done by all these people here in collaboration with the people from the ICM, Brain and Spine Institute, yeah, something like that. In fact, a collaboration with Daniel Alvarez-Fischer, who spent several years with us at the Collège de France. So, as you can see here, in the adult, and as I have mentioned before, NGRELT, one of its transcription factors, is heavily expressed in the VTA and in the substantia nigra, to the point that it's very difficult to distinguish between the TH staining and the NGRELT staining in these slides. Personally, I don't know which one is TH and which one is NGRELT at this point. In something like 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, 8 years ago, in fact, we published that in the NGRL1 mutant, you know, in the substantia nigra, you have two genes, N2 and N1. Okay, so the two genes are equivalent. If you knock in N2 into N1, you save the N1 phenotype. So N2 and N1 are equivalent in the midbrain, not everywhere in the body, but in the midbrain, so that when you remove one allele of NGRL1, you still have three alleles of active NGRELT, one of N1 and two N2 alleles. So if you remove only one allele out of four, what you see in the substantia nigra is a progressive death of your cells, and the death is more important in the substantia nigra than in the VTA, which is something you also find, as you know, in Parkinson's disease. Not to say that we have a model of Parkinson's disease, but just to say that in this mutant, we have a phenotype which evokes, in fact, Parkinson's disease. It also does evoke Parkinson's disease, because as you can see here, in the collaboration that we had with Patrick Brindin, we could show that we have a retrograde degeneration. This is the aspect of the fibers in the striatum of the NGRL heterozygote. Correlatively, we have slowly developing motor behaviors that evoke Parkinson's disease, like locomotor activity, amphetamine sensitization, coordination, and also the non-motor behaviors, like depressive-like behavior, anhedonic-like behavior, and poor social interactions. Well, at the time, I mean, we decided to see whether just introducing the protein, by infusing the protein in the substantia nigra, could repair the missing gene. And as you can see here, in these infusion studies, where you can see that the protein is readily internalized by the cells, you can see that what happens is that you immediately block cell death. This was not extremely surprising. You remove a gene and you add the protein back, and it's normal that you can fix the mouse. When we looked at the mechanism that could be involved, and based on previous studies that we had done with Christine Holt on axon guidance in 2005, we looked at the protein synthesis. As you know, these transcription factors are not only transcription factors, but also translation regulators, and as you will see, modifiers of the epigenetic state of the chromatin. So here what you can see is that we introduce NGREL in the synaptoneurosomes of the midbrain neurons. Immediately what you can see is that you have an increase in the synthesis of mitochondrial proteins. Now, you know that mitochondria, as they migrate along the axons or along the dendrites, as we just heard from Frédéric's talk, travel with their messenger RNAs. Most of the messenger RNAs are nuclear RNAs because the mitochondria only make 13 proteins by themselves. So they travel with their mitochondrial messenger RNAs, and these RNAs are locally translated in the synapse, in the growth cones, wherever, I mean, they can be translated. So what we could see, in fact, is that NGREL being internalized, and this is some work we did with Christine Holt in the past, when protein is internalized, the first thing it does is to regulate the translation of this messenger RNA that encodes proteins, mitochondrial proteins, in particular, complex one mitochondrial messenger RNA. Okay, and this leads to the rapid increase in ATP synthesis, as you can see here at the level of growth cone. Now, if you look at a one-year-old mouse with the NGREL mutation, the heterozygote for NGREL1, you can see that specifically in the substantia nigra, you have a decrease in the expression of NDFS1 and NDFS3, which are two major components of complex 1, regulated at the translation level by NGREL. We then decided to look at whether NGREL could regulate cell survival, not only when you remove the gene, but when you intoxicate the cells in a normal mouse. And this work was done in the lab. I mean, Julia Fuchs and Daniel Alvarez-Fischer were very important in this study. This is an example where we have intoxicated the mice with MPTP, and where you can see that the intoxication with MPTP that kills the neurons is sort of modified, I mean, by NGREL. If you infuse NGREL in your mouse, you save 50% of your cells. The important point in this slide is that if you look at the level of dopamine, you have an increase in dopamine synthesis, which is very, very strong, to the point that, in fact, you have more dopamine in the striatum than in the wild-type animals. So you have saved the cells, but each cell that remains makes more dopamine than before, okay? Now, and this increase in dopamine synthesis is dependent on the translation of NDFS1, in this case, but also in NDFS3. So if you remove the translational capacity, the regulation of translation by NGREL of NDFS1, which is one of these complex 1 protein, you lose your effect. So the translation of this mitochondrial messenger RNA is necessary to have the to maintain the effect of NGREL as a pro-survival factor for these aminergic neurons. This you can also see at the level of the rotation behavior. This is an MPTP animal. I mean, we kill the cells at the same level on both sides. So if you inject amphetamine, they don't rotate. But if you infuse NGREL on one side, this side will be more active. And if you have a control siRNA, you have a rotation. Now, if you remove NDFS1 using an active siRNA, now you don't have rotation anymore, showing that you have not saved your cells. So at the level of the behavior, you also have the necessity to maintain the translation of mitochondrial messenger RNA through the internalization of the transcription factor, if I may call it a transcription factor at this point. This works not only in the MPTP model, but also in the 6-hydroxydopamine model and in the mutated alpha-synuclein model, showing that, in fact, NGREL protects in the 3 best known mouse models of Parkinson's disease. And this is what was illustrated by Greenmayer in a comment made in Nature Neuroscience in 2011, that in fact, if you kill your mitochondria, so to say, using 6-hydroxydopamine, MPTP, rotenone, or alpha-synuclein, now you can save them by injecting NGREL, which is internalized, in fact, by the cells directly, And this requires the local translation of mitochondrial messenger RNA. Now, what happened then is that by accident, I think Julia Fuchs did an experiment in the lab consisting in injecting Anguille on one side in a normal animal. And when you inject amphetamine to this normal animal, they start relating because Anguille activates one nigrosiazole pathway and not the other one, the one on the side which was injected. But she came back 3 months later and she re-injected amphetamine and the mice were still rotating. And the protein was not there anymore, suggesting that we had the cells have kept the memory of being injected by Anguille 3 months before, and suggesting that what we have here is something which is a nuclear epigenetic effect. I mean, you know, the term epigenetic is used in several ways, and here when I say epigenetic, I mean chromatin remodeling, and not, and I want to be very precise on that, okay? So this is how we decided to embark into this adventure of whether these transcription factors, in addition to being transcription factors and translation factors, could be epigenetic remodelers. And this is the dream team that has been working on this aspect for the last 2 or 3 years, and this will be my main message today. So to start with, we did an RNA-seq by dissecting the substantia nigra of wild-type versus heterozygote animals. And we did it between 6 and 8 weeks, because at this stage, even though the gene is missing, all the cells are still present. They are not dead yet. So you're comparing things which can be compared. And when you look at what are the main modified genes in this RNA-seq, you have a DNA damage response and the chromatin remodeling. And the genes here have been ranked by p-values, taking the genes expressed with the higher number of reads. And as you can see in blue and in green, and in red also for apoptosis, I mean, these are the three categories of genes that move most in the mutant. So we went back to the mutant and we looked at several marks, either for DNA strand breaks or DNA breaks. And you can see here, looking at the gamma H2AX histone, which is phosphorylated. And when you have a double strand break, you can see, or even single strand breaks, you can see here that in the Engrel mutant, as soon as 8 weeks, you already have breaks in your DNA. Something like 16% of the cells from the nigra have these breaks. In the VTA, you see nothing. And remember, the VTA does not degenerate as fast in the Engrel mutant. You also see some activated caspase 3, which you will never see in a wild-type animal. You can also look at other heterochromatin marks. For example, and I'm not going to give you all the marks, but a good example here is the H3K27-methyl-3, which has a very high expression around the nucleus and also around the nucleus. And you can see here that in the mutant, at 6 to 8 weeks, you have lost this high density of expression around the nucleolus and also around the nucleus. You can also look at the DAPI staining, what we call the chromocenters. And in the chromocenters, you can see that in the mutant, the size of the chromocenters is decreased, and you have a higher proportion of small diameter chromocenters. So this is also a change in epigenetic marks. The nucleolus was not modified physically. If you look at the size of a nucleolus, you could see nothing. But when you look at nucleolar markers, you could see that very early, a lot of genes involved in the organization and biogenesis of a nucleolus are modified. You have an increase at 8 weeks in the transcription of the pre-45S ribosomal RNA, which is synthesized in the nucleolus. And what you can see here, which is sort of interesting, as you will see, is that you have a legitimate expression, enhanced expression, of genes which encode mobile elements in the genome. Okay. So this suggests that we have modification in the organization of the nucleolus and other chromatin. Now, what we did then was to do an oxidative stress. And this in a way, I mean, these changes, I mean, could say that in the NGRAIL mutant, we have an accelerated aging of the cells, basically. So we decided to see whether, when you put an oxidative stress to these cells, whether the cells that are missing or lacking one NGRAIL allele are more sensitive to oxidative stress. And as you can see here, looking, for example, at the amount of double-strand breaks in your DNA, you can see that if you impose 6-hydroxydopamine directly injected in the NGRA, this is a very, very strong stress for these poor cells, okay? You kill your cells, or you induce double-strand breaks, but you also kill your cells. But if you do it in the context of the NGRAIL mutant, the number of breaks that you have and the number of cells that die are higher, meaning that in the mutant, the cells are more sensitive to an oxidative stress. Now, as you know, NGRAIL is a repressor, primarily a repressor, not only a repressor, but primarily a repressor. So we design an activator NGRAIL. To that end, we have linked the NGRAIL homeodomain, but we take the protein to the cognate binding sites in the chromatin to an activator domain, which is four times the VP16 domain from herpes virus. And when you do that and you infuse this protein at the level of the NGRA, now you kill your cells, as you can see here, but also you induce the number of double-strand breaks, meaning that an activator NGRAIL, which acts like an anti-NGRAIL, in fact, within the cells, is able to reproduce the phenotype in part that you have in the NGRAIL mutant, suggesting that we really have a transcriptional effect of the protein on the physiology, the survival, the aging, if you prefer, of these aminergic neurons. So then we went to the oxidative stress. Okay, we made an oxidative stress to the cells. And if you impose 6-hydroxydopamine directly to the cells, you can see that you have a lot of similarities between the oxidative stress phenotype and the NGRAIL heterozygote phenotype. You can see it at the level of the heterochromatin marks, H3K9-methyl-3, H3K27-methyl-3 as well. I don't show it. You can see it at the level of a double-strand breaks. You can see it at the level of MESCP2. You can see at the level of the size of the chromocenters, DAPI. You can see it also at the level of the nucleolin here. You can see that the nucleolus is disrupted. And you can see it at the level of the abnormal expression of mobile element in your cells. So there is a huge similarity between the NGRAIL heterozygote mutant phenotype and the phenotype that you obtain when you impose an oxidative stress to your cells. So the idea was obvious, was can we save from oxidative stress by just infusing or injecting, in this case, NGRAIL in the NGRA? So what we did, the dream team did, was to inject 6-hydroxydopamine in the NGRA, and 30 minutes later, well, it's not a long time after, but you know, it's a very huge stress. 60 minutes later, to add NGRAIL injection, one single injection, okay? And when you do that, you can see here that you save your cells. Not all of the cells, but you save your cells. And in addition to that, and what I think is more interesting in a way, is that if you look at nucleolin, if you look at the histone, repressive histone, if you look at the number of double-strand breaks, you can see that you restore the heterochromatin marks, so that injecting the protein brings back the surviving cells that have been protected by the protein to normality when you think of the heterochromatin marks, suggesting that you can really save your cells for a very, very long period of time, hopefully until the animal dies, and not too early, hopefully also. So we did another RNA-seq experiment, consisting in doing the RNA-seq, following 6-hydroxydopamine and sham injection, or 6-hydroxydopamine and NGRAIL injection. Okay, looking at the genes which are upregulated by Angerhald following the strong oxidative stress in the substantia nigra. And as you can see here in red, I mean, anti-apoptotic genes are heavily upregulated by Angerhald after the oxidative stress. So you really block apoptosis because you are upregulating anti-apoptotic genes. And you also modify genes involved in apoptosis and chromatin remodeling, like GAT45B here. And you can see here that at the end of the day, phosphoryn kinase, which is a good end product provoking cell death, is now downregulated to zero. So this means that through this transcription activity of the transcription factor, now it is a transcription factor, you're going to save your cells and then restore the epigenetic marks. A nice thing about using a protein that can be internalized by the cells is that you can do it in the presence of cyclohexamide and identify direct target genes. And this is a good example here. You can see that GAD45B, GADD45B, which is an epigenetic remodeler, but also an anti-apoptotic protein, is a direct target for Angerhald, which is not the case for PML as a negative control. So this is all for the oxidation. Okay, now I'm going to shift gear for 10 minutes and show you some results, which are preliminary results on line expressions. No. What are lines? I mean, you know, lines are transposable elements. 40% of our genome is composed of lines. Most of them are foci. They don't jump anymore. Even though they can be transcribed to make long non-coding RNA, they can have an influence on gene expression. But we still have, in the human, 100 of these genes that can jump from place to place. The mice have 3,000 of them, so it's not something which is can be neglected, okay? Now, it was believed that these transposable elements, full length, are only expressed in germ cells. Testis, for example. One example. So, it was a big surprise when we looked at the expression of lines to find that full length lines are expressed in the aminergic neurons. You can see here, this is ORF1, which is one of the open reading frame of L1, which is one of the lines. ORF2, the second open reading frame, with the 5' UTR and the 3' UTR. We isolated the messenger RNA using poly-A, so we had the 3' UTR, and then we amplify between the 5' UTR and this ORF2, and what we get is full-length messenger RNA expressed in the cells. If you take ORF1P antibodies, you have the full-length protein expressed in the cells. And if you do an immunostaining, you can see that you have a co-localization of tyrosine hydroxylase and ORF1P. And you see it also by in situ hybridization. So this means that these cells express full-length transposable elements, which was totally unexpected, I should say. When you have an oxidative stress, inject 6-hydroxydopamine in your cells, not only do you have ORF1P present, but ORF1P is now translocated into the nucleus. So this suggests that the stress not only may regulate the expression of ORF1, as you could see in the first slide, but we have a higher regulation of what I call the illegitimate genes, and I call lines illegitimate genes, but at the same time, the protein goes into the nucleus. Now, this is important because this might be a way to make a nick in your DNA. Because, as you know, ORF1P is encoding for a nuclease, as it is encoding for reverse transcriptase. Now, what we did it was to verify if Angerhald could be a direct regulator of line expression in the aminergic neurons. So what was done by my younger colleagues was first to do a chromatin immunoprecipitation with an Angerhald antibody. And as you can see here, and using poly-DIDC to block the non-specific site, or NP6, which is a piece of DNA normally recognized by Angerhald. So if you had a lot of NP6, you don't pull down the DNA because all the sites are already occupied. And as you can see here, if you pull down your DNA, if you add NP6, I mean, you pull down nothing. This is normal. But now, if you look by by PCR, the DNA which has been pulled down, you have line the four families of line one. So this means that NGRL binds the promoters of the lines, or at least very close to the line genes. Now, the second explanation, I mean, the second evidence that NGRL is a direct regulator of line expression, is that it can infuse NGRL in the midbrain in the presence of cycloexamide and 6-hydroxydopamine. So you impose an oxidative stress to your cells, and you put cycloexamide so that you have a direct target only. And as you can see, when you do that, NGRL is a repressor of line expression. You repress the expression of your lines, which has been upregulated due to 6-hydroxydopamine injection. Now, you can use the trick of making an activator NGRL, as you could see before, by linking the homodomain of NGRL to VP64. And again, in the presence of cycloexamide, you have an upregulation of line expression. So we think that NGRL may do part of a job by directly regulating the expression of transposable elements in the aminergic neurons. In fact, we have another evidence that NGRL is a direct regulator of line expression using this plasmid in which GFP was cloned in the reverse orientation, so that to have GFP expressed, you need to have a retrotransposition event, okay? And as you can see here, if you induce the expression of the lines and the retrotransposition, if you now express NGRL in your cells, you partially repress the expression of GFP in your cells, demonstrating directly that NGRL is the regulator of line expression. So I will conclude here because we had two very long days. I don't want to take too much of your time. But this is just to show you that this transcription factor may be, at the crossroad of several pathways which are extremely important for the protection and possibly the protection of the aminergic neurons and possibly the repair of some diseases associated to the loss of these neurons, including Parkinson's disease. Might not be the only one. Indeed, NGRL has an effect on the protection against dopaminergic death through the regulation of the translation of mitochondrial messenger RNA, as was shown by Alvarez, Fischer, Fuchs, and colleagues some years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. In addition, this is through translation, as you can see here. And this, again, could target to Parkinson's. This was done and shown in 3 models of Parkinson's disease in the mouse. Now, NGRL could also have an anti-oxidative stress and chromatin opening effect, as is now, I just showed a few minutes ago, in the oxidative stress imposed by the injection of 6-hydroxydopamine. And as you can see here, this might block the chromatin opening, which is imposed or provoked by the stress, the oxidative stress, specifically to the TH cells. Now, this chromatin opening induces line expression. And I showed you that. And this is something which is not totally new. I mean, it has been shown by other people. And what we think here is that NGRL may downregulate line 1 expression because it is a direct repressor of line expression. And all this being taken together will end up by blocking the formation of DNA strand breaks and possibly, we hope, by protecting the cells, aminergic cells, against cell death. If we extrapolate to Parkinson's disease, we hope that NGRL can be considered as a therapeutic protein for this human disease. I will stop here. I hope I've not been too lengthy, but I need to thank the sources, financial sources, that are cited on this slide. And, well, you can read. I don't have to read them for you. Thank you.